latest small coastal stock assessment, the black-nosed sharks were found to be overfished, with overfishing occurring. There was a 2008 ICAT stock assessment that assessed shortfin mako sharks and also blue sharks. And these shortfin mako sharks were found to be not overfished, but approaching an overfished condition, and found that overfishing was occurring. Currently, smooth dogfish are not managed at the federal level and are in need of conservation and management measures. And so in this amendment, we are proposing to add smooth dogfish to the HMS management unit. This is the overview of the Amendment 3 objectives: to rebuild and end overfishing of black-nosed sharks, also to end overfishing of shortfin mako, and ensure the sustainability of smooth dogfish by implementing conservation and management measures. Here are the other specific objectives for Amendment 3. We need to implement a rebuilding plan due to the overfished status of black-nosed sharks, also to end overfishing of black-nosed and shortfin mako, and provide the opportunity for sustainable harvest of the other small coastal sharks. Another objective that I'm sure that you are all aware of is to implement annual catch limits and accountability measures. We are proposing to do that in this amendment for Atlantic sharks. This is a time frame for our action. We did scoping in July through November of 2008. We prepared a pre-draft that we presented to our advisory panel in February of 2009, and we released the proposed rule and the draft EIS in July. And the public comment period is open until, actually, tomorrow is the last day of the public comment period. And we are expecting the final rule and EIS in early winter, and then the final rule to be published in spring. So here is the process that we established for ACLs and accountability measures for Atlantic sharks. It's outlined in this diagram, and I will not spend a lot of time on this just because I know that the council is very familiar with this process. We have determined that the OFL is greater than the ABC, which is the acceptable biological catch, which is greater than the annual catch limit. Currently, we're assuming that ABC is equal to ACL, and once we have future stock assessments, we will be getting the ABC from the stock assessments, and we'll be using that in the future. Our commercial quotas are, considering those that equal to the landings component of the sector ACL, and some of the accountability measures that we consider are restrictions on the use of over and under harvest and closing the fishery when the commercial landings are projected to be at 80% of the quota. So those are a few of the accountability measures that we currently have in place. Okay, so here are the topics that I'll be going through. I will do black-nosed sharks first and then shortfin mako, and then I'll go through the smooth dogfish alternatives. So this table shows black-nosed shark mortality from 1999 to 2005. And on average, the annual mortality of black-nosed sharks was 86,381 sharks per year. This table shows the breakdown of the fisheries where the black-nosed shark mortality is occurring. So the 2007 stock assessment recommended a constant TAC of 19,200 individuals, which would lead to rebuilding with a 70% probability by 2027. So in order to attain that TAC, we have to reduce mortality of black-nosed sharks by 78% across all fisheries, not just HMS fisheries, but also the recreational fisheries and the shrimp trawl fisheries. However, in this amendment, we are not proposing management measures for the shrimp trawl fishery. We are only proposing measures for the HMS fisheries, and we are working with the South Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Councils on the shrimp trawl bycatch mortality of black-nosed sharks. Okay, so I will go through the commercial quota alternatives for that we looked at for black-nosed sharks. The first one is the no-action alternative. This would maintain the existing small coastal species complex and quota. Currently, we manage the small coastals in a complex of four sharks with fine-tooth, bonnet head, Atlantic sharp nose, and black nose. And the current quota is 454 metric tons. Alternative A2 would remove black-nosed sharks from the small coastal quota and establish a separate black-nosed quota. The current annual average landings of black-nosed is 61.5 metric tons. So this alternative would subtract that amount from the average landings of the other small coastals, which would result in a quota of 392.5 metric tons for the small coastals, and a black-nosed-specific quota would be that 61.5 metric tons would be reduced by 78%, which would result in a black-nosed quota of 13.5 metric tons. Alternative A3 would also remove black-nosed sharks from the small coastal quota, and it would establish a non-black-nosed small coastal quota and a black-nosed-specific quota. That 42.7 metric ton dress weight quota is a 82% reduction. And NIMS estimates that by reducing the overall small coastal quota, we can reduce the level of black-nosed shark mortality so that it is would stay below the allowance of the 19,200 sharks. That 16.6 metric ton black-nosed quota is the amount of black-nosed that would be harvested while the other small coastal quota is harvested. Alternative A4 is very similar to alternative A3. We would again remove black-nosed sharks from the small coastal quota and implement a separate black-nosed quota. The 56.9 metric ton small coastal quota is a 78% reduction of the average landings. And again, we estimated that by reducing this overall small coastal quota, we can get that black-nosed mortality below what was recommended by the stock assessment. However, under this alternative, we would remove gill net gear as an authorized gear for sharks. And I will be touching on this a little bit later with the commercial gear alternatives. Under this alternative, incidental limited access permit holders would not be able to retain black-nosed sharks under alternative A4. And then alternative A5 would close the small coastal shark fishery. So at this time, we are preferring alternative A4. Because of the reduction of black-nosed sharks and because of the prohibition of gillnet gear. Gillnet gear is the primary gear that catches black-nosed sharks, so we can significantly reduce black-nosed It wasn't me.
Leanne, whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I will continue now that we've stretched our legs and we got coffee. Okay, so I think I was at alternative A5. We looked at to close the entire small coastal shark fishery, so that was the last commercial quota alternative that we looked at for black nose. So now I will go to the commercial gear restrictions. We looked at three alternatives, the first one being to maintain the current authorized gear for commercial shark fishing. Alternative B2 would close the shark gillnet fishery, and so that would remove gillnet gear as an authorized gear for sharks. NMSA is considering this alternative because, as I mentioned before, gillnet gear is the predominant gear that is used to fish for small coastals and black-nosed sharks in the South Atlantic. And therefore, removing this gear could reduce the mortality of black-nosed sharks significantly. We also looked at closing the gillnet fishery to commercial shark fishing from South Carolina south, which would include the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea. This would eliminate the predominant gear type used to harvest black-nosed sharks in the South Atlantic region, and this is the distribution of the black-nosed sharks is in the South Atlantic region. This alternative would also help mitigate impacts of adding the smooth dogfish fishery, which uses gill nets from North Carolina north. And this is our preferred alternative at this time. We also looked at recreational alternatives. The first one is the no action alternative. We would maintain the current recreational retention and size limits, which for black-nosed sharks, it is one shark per vessel per trip. There is a minimum size limit of 4.5 feet, and you can also take a sharp nose and a bonnet head per person per trip, and there is no size limit on those two species. We looked at modifying the recreational size limit for black-nosed sharks based on their biology. We looked at reducing it to 36 inches work length, which is the size at which 50% of females reach sexual maturity. We also looked at increasing the recreational retention limit for Atlantic sharpnose based on the current catches. This was a request from constituents. This species is not overfished, and there is no overfishing, so we looked at increasing the retention limit. And then our preferred alternative is alternative D4 to prohibit the retention of black-nosed sharks. Recreational fishermen would still be able to catch black-nosed but not retain this species. This alternative would help rebuild black-nosed sharks by reducing federal waters. However, there are catches of black-nosed sharks in state waters, and so we would work very closely with states to have them potentially backstop this measure. Okay, moving on to short fin mako. Again, the ICAT SCRS, the Standing Committee on Research and Statistics, did the stock assessment in 2008 and found that overfishing was occurring. This species is caught as bycatch in the pelagic longline fishery, and it is a very valuable bycatch species because of the quality of the meat. However, our portion of the Atlantic-wide short fin mako mortality is fairly small, around less than 10%. So compared to the other countries at ICAT that have short fin mako mortality. So we looked at a range of alternatives for the commercial short fin mako fishery. First, the no action alternative. We manage short fin mako in the pelagic shark complex with oceanic whitetip and common thresher. There is a 488 metric ton quota for this complex. Alternative C2, we looked at removing short fin mako sharks from this pelagic shark quota and establishing a specific short fin mako quota equal to the average landings. And current average landings of short fin mako is around 72.5 metric tons. We also looked at removing short fin mako sharks from the pelagic shark quota and placing it on the prohibited species list. This would prohibit any retention of short fin mako in the commercial fishery. Alternative C4, we looked at establishing a commercial size limit for short fin mako. Currently, there are no commercial size limits for sharks, so we looked at two size limits, the first one being a interdorsal length measurement of 32 inches, which is the size at which 50% of female short fin makos reach sexual maturity. So the interdorsal length is the measurement from the trailing edge of the first dorsal to the leading edge of the second dorsal. And the reason we looked at this measurement is because in the commercial fishery, they can take the head off. So we also looked at a minimum size of 22 inches, which is the size at which 50% of male shortfin mako sharks reaches sexual maturity. And then our two preferred alternatives, the first one is to take action at the international level through various international fisheries management organizations to develop management measures that are applicable to all the participating nations. We felt that because our contribution to the Atlantic-wide mortality was so small that to ending overfishing could not be accomplished by the U.S. alone, and so we felt that taking measures to the international level where other countries can participate in mortality reductions would be the best for this stock. Our other preferred alternative would also would promote the release of shortfin mako sharks that are brought to the fishing vessel alive. When we looked at data from observers, we found that about 68% of shortfin makos are alive at haulback, and so this would not change the regulations, but we would do outreach with fishermen to promote the release of shortfin makos. And just to note, both of these preferred alternatives would not change any of the commercial regulations for shortfin mako. We also looked at recreational alternatives for shortfin mako. The first one being the no action, which would maintain the recreational retention limit and size limit, which there is a 4.5 foot, like I mentioned before, with black nose. We also, as with the commercial alternatives, we looked at increasing the recreational minimum size for shortfin mako, and we looked at two different measurements, like we did in the commercial fishery. The first one being the female size as of 108 inch fork length. However, this would lead to a large reduction in recreational landings, about a 98% reduction in recreational landings if we put a 108 inch fork length measure size limit. And then the other one was a 73 inch size limit, which is the size at which 50% of male shortfin makos reach sexual maturity. And this would also lead to a large reduction in recreational landings, about 60%. Okay. And then we, similar to the commercial preferred alternatives, we alternative E3 would be to take action at the international level to end overfishing, like with the commercial alternatives, as well as promoting the release of shortfin makos that are brought to the vessel alive in the recreational fishery. We also looked at prohibiting the landing of shortfin mako sharks. It would make it a catch-and-release fishery only, and so no retention of shortfin mako. And so neither of these proposed preferred alternatives changes the recreational regulations for shortfin mako. Okay, so moving on to smooth dogfish. Smooth dogfish are currently not federally managed. There is incomplete catch data, and there is also no stock assessment, so there is an unknown stock status. And there are some taxonomic classification issues with the Florida smooth hound. There is emerging research that indicates that there have been taxonomic classification errors relating to smooth dogfish. The Florida smooth hound, which is found in the Gulf of Mexico, has been found to be the same species as smooth dogfish, determined by genetic analysis. So this misclassification has likely led to underrepresentation of smooth dogfish data collection. The map that you see there, that is, and the small dots are observation data from multiple sources. So you can see the distribution and range of where the smooth dogfish is found. Okay, so we looked at three alternatives for and some sub-alternatives for smooth dogfish. The first one being the no-action alternative is not to add smooth dogfish under NIMS management. The second would be to add smooth dogfish and implement management measures such as a federal permit requirement. We also looked at adding smooth dogfish under NIMS management, but mirroring the management measures that were implemented in the ASMFC Interstate Shark FMP, which their plan does include smooth dogfish. So NIMS management under alternative F2 would entail the following things in the left-hand column. If we decide to move forward with alternative A2, it would require that fins be attached, just like the other sharks that we manage. A commercial and recreational permit would be required. These would be open access permits. The other shark permits, the directed and incidental permits, are limited access. However, the smooth dogfish permits would be an open access permit. There would be dealer reporting. Gill nets would be allowed from North Carolina North. We would be required to designate essential fish habitat, and there would be a quota implemented, which I will go through. We would not require workshops currently. There are a few workshops that are required with our permits, sea turtle safe handling workshops and a shark ID workshop. There would be no logbook requirements at this time, so federal fishermen who got a smooth dogfish permit would not be required to fill out logbooks. And really our intent with this is to characterize this fishery, to get an idea of the universe of fishermen, and to begin to collect data. So our intent is not to change the fishery, so there would be no recreational size retention limits or commercial size or retention limits. We looked at three sub-alternatives for the quota, the first one being an average based on the average annual landings from 98 to 2007. We also looked at a quota that would be equal to the maximum annual landings. And finally, our preferred alternative, again, because our intent is not to shut down the fishery and just to characterize it, we looked at an alternative that is equal to the maximum annual landings plus one standard deviation, and that is our preferred alternative at this time. We also have a exempted fishing permit program for research of shark species, and we are proposing to add smooth dogfish to the list of sharks that we have quotas for the exempted fishing program, and we would propose to establish a 6 metric ton whole weight set aside quota just for smooth dogfish specific research. So those are the sub alternatives under alternative F2. And then finally, the alternative F3 to mirror the ASMFC management plan. There was recently an addendum to the ASMFC Interstate Shark Plan that deals with smooth dogfish and processing at sea, as well as a removal of the 2-hour gillnet checks and the recreational retention limits. That has just been approved by ASMFC, so we're looking at how that coincides with what we move forward with in Amendment 3. The other thing is that we can't simply mirror the ASMFC plan because we are required to implement ACLs and EFH for smooth dogfish, and those are not included in the ASMFC plan. Okay, as I mentioned, we are required when we have federal management of a highly migratory species to designate essential fish habitat, and that map that I showed previously with the observation data, those are the data that we used to propose our essential fish habitat. And we just recently completed the final Amendment 1 to the consolidated HMS FMP, which laid out the process for establishing essential fish habitat. And we used the same process here as we did in Amendment 1 for our essential fish habitat. Okay, so that is all I have. Like I said, the comment period closes tomorrow, so we will begin to move forward with our final management measures at that time. And I will. Oh, actually, I have some other. Because we are currently with this new dogfish fishery, proposing to add it to the management unit. We asked for specific comments on a variety of smooth dogfish questions so we could get a better idea of what's happening in the fishery. And so the list that you see there and in the handout, in the copy of the presentation, are specific questions mostly geared towards the smooth dogfish fishery and the gillnet fishery. So these are some of the questions, specific questions that we asked in the proposed rule. And most of them have to do with the current gillnet fishery and if we add smooth dogfish with federal permits and the requirements that are currently required by the gillnet fishery, would they be required of the smooth dogfish fishery? Okay, and this is the list of public hearings. However, we finished our last public hearing on Tuesday in Portsmouth and in Louisiana. So this is the last stop on the circuit. So we are completed our consultation. And with that, I will take any questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Any questions or comments for Leanne? Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a few comments that I would share at this point. And this has been a significant question for the MID. We had requested previously the Secretary Management Authority for the species, given the fact that 98% of the commercial landings occur in the Mid-Atlantic region. It is very much of a niche-type fishery. It's a small fishery, but it's significant for those participants that prosecute the fishery. Most of the landings occur in Virginia and North Carolina. Just by way of background, I developed the fishery in Virginia in the early 1990s, so have quite a bit of familiarity with the details of it. We recently convened a meeting of our HMS subcommittee and our spiny dogfish committee to develop our council's position on that. We did that Monday in Philadelphia, and I would just make a few points here today to share with your council. We've concluded that we really question the benefits that will come from federal management of the species over and above what could be achieved by managing the species through the existing mechanisms at the ASMFC, since the ASMFC has already incorporated smooth dogfish under its management plan. And this is for one particular reason, and it relates to one part of Magnuson that, if applied to this fishery, could potentially be fatal to it, and that is Section 307.1P, which includes language about a rebuttable presumption, and it relates to the fin-to-carcass ratio, and that is the rebuttable presumption language in 307.1P indicates that if your fin weight exceeds 5% of your carcass weight, then there's a rebuttable presumption that, in fact, it was in violation of 307.1P, which requires that you not land any more fins than carcasses. And there's several reasons that the fin weights on these fish come in quite high. First, both dorsals are retained, unlike other sharks. Second, the fins are straight cut, so the base of the fin is left attached to the fin. Third, the napes are removed from the fish, so with the belly flap off, the carcass basis is reduced, and that affects the fin percentage at the end of the day. So all three of those factors contribute to fin weights that come in at about 9.5% to 10% of the carcass weight. If the tail is retained in addition to that, then the weights go up to about 13 or 14%. And so consequently, in our comments, we're going to ask that the service try to address this question on a long-term basis, because we think at the end of the day, if there's going to be a management plan, it ought to work in both state and federal waters, because it'd be unfortunate because of that one clause to have the fishery forced simply into state waters, for example. But we really question that there would be any benefits. We don't think there's much risk of this fishery expanding. It's a very small fishery. In Virginia, there are about 12 boats a year that catch over 5,000 pounds. in North Carolina, that number might be 16 or 18. We put together data tables from the individual states to document that. There are major problems with the landings history going back into the 1990s. For example, in Virginia in 1996, the federal data indicates that there were zero landings. I've submitted commercial data indicating that purchases were made in Virginia in excess of 500,000 pounds in that year. That just gives you an idea of the order of magnitude of problems in the catch data from that period at least. But it is a stable fishery. It's not growing. So there's not a significant risk in the fishery running away, in our opinion. And so our position on smooth dogfish is that we would support letting the ASMFC manage it, but we would also recommend that if that's the case, that the ASMFC consider adopting the quota, which would be the historical average plus one standard deviation at a minimum, and also require mandatory dealer reporting. And that's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Anything further from the council? I had a couple of questions. If I go to the black-nosed sharks, I believe I heard you say that this action and these proposals will not address the Gulf of Maine shrimp fishery. Is that right?
Gulf of Mexico.
Gulf of Mexico, sorry.
No, it's okay. GOM,
Gulf of Maine. Gulf of Mexico shrimp fishery.
Correct.
But I note that some of the proposed alternatives would eliminate the recreational fishery, would possibly eliminate the net fishery, right? And I'm just curious, what standard will the Gulf of Mexico shrimp fishery be held to? The same standard of trying to eliminate its catch?
Yes, we have requested, you know, that the Gulf of Mexico and South Atlantic Council take action to reduce mortality by 78%. So they are also held to the same, you know, the 78% reduction that the HMS fishery must reduce mortality by. And we have said, you know, it is up to the councils to decide what management measures they move forward with when deciding to reduce the mortality.
Okay. I raised that issue just because here in this region we're told we have a turtle problem with our scallop fishery. And I'll note, unless my perceptions and my facts are wrong, I note that the same turtles that we're struggling to manage around our scallop fishery, to manage our scallop fishery around, are also caught in this shrimp fishery. And it would be, I guess, nice if we could get some reductions in that fishery as well on turtles. I know it's not your problem. That's not why you're here, but it'd be interesting if we could open up the whole question of turtles across the range of the turtles throughout all the fisheries and deal with the problem holistically. And then I had one more comment on shortfin. The U.S. proportion of Atlantic-wide shortfin mako catch is less than 10%. And this is an ICAT managed?
ICAT, for a long time, did not have directed shark management measures. It is, it's a tuna and tuna-like species organization. It manages tunas and billfish and swordfish. However, it is increasingly common to put bycatch measures in place for both sea turtles and in the recent past for sharks. So it is not directly managed by ICAT, but there are legally binding recommendations at ICAT that deal with shortfin mako. Such things as reducing mortality of shortfin mako and poor beagle, and so.
So a majority of the mortality on the stock is in ICAT-managed fisheries?
Exactly. A lot of the landings are coming from Spain, Portugal, some of the EU countries, and their fisheries, yes.
It's troubling just thinking about where we've ended up on bluefin tuna. Right now we're staring down the possibility of a CITES listing, and just unfortunate. I would hope that we would be able to preserve the small percentage of mortality that we contribute to on this resource and put pressure on ICAP member nations to carry their weight. I'll just leave it at that. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a special permit or endorsement specifically for smooth dogfish?
Currently, there is not.
There is not. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Currently, there is no federal permit required.
I see.
And we would, that's one of the things that we are proposing is to add an open access federal permit. Yes.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Well, thank you very much. Oh, I have a hand. Mark.
The commission reversed itself on the question of having fins attached on smooth dogfish. Can you explain the rationale behind the fins attached requirement that you have? It was on slide 25.
Yep. So in 2008, with amendment to the consolidated HMS-FMP, we moved forward with the fins attached requirement for the all Atlantic sharks that we manage. This was due to enforcement and ID problems in the fishery. And so moving forward with that alternative for smooth dogfish is due to consistency with the other shark. And so it doesn't create a loophole for enforcement. Having fins separate from carcasses on a vessel right now, that is prohibited. You know, the fins must be attached. So to avoid any enforcement loopholes, we are also proposing that with smooth dogfish.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We discussed this issue extensively in our committee meetings earlier this week, and this is problematic for the fishery because smooth dogfish are uniquely prone to spoilage and discoloration. Their flesh is translucent in its qualities, and if all the blood's not removed, then they're very prone to discoloration in a way that's unique from all other shark species. And consequently, that's why the napes are removed. It facilitates the cleaning. And if you remove the napes, you're also removing the pectoral fin. So the only way to save all the fins and leave them attached is rather than removing the belly flap to split the fish up the middle, which inhibits the cleaning process. Also, leaving the tail attached inhibits bleeding because when the tail is removed, the fish is bled. So it's going to compromise the product quality. Again, this is a very unique little fishery, and we've argued that if it's going to be managed, that those unique fishery attributes should be taken into consideration. And quite frankly, if you look at the sketch of that smooth dogfish at the top of that diagram, you'll see that it has two very prominent dorsal fins, unlike most other sharks. And the location of those fins, together with the translucent quality of the flesh, make them very easily identified, in contrast to juvenile sandbar sharks. And I think that's where the conservation concern might be, is that those two species can be commingled in the catch. But they're very easily visually distinguished because of the location of the second dorsal, even if that dorsal is removed. So I think the enforcement concerns are actually, if anything, probably easily addressed. And that those are, again, some of the unique characteristics of this fishery that we think have to be addressed if management's going to be informed as it moves forward. Thank you.
I will mention for the large coastal fishery and for all the shark fisheries, with the fins attached requirement, we do allow the fishermen to remove the head and eviscerate the shark at sea. We also allow the fins to be cut almost all the way off, and as long as they're left attached to the carcass by a small portion of uncut skin, that allows the fishermen to, with the large coastal sharks where the fins are very large, to fold the fins, and it allows for packing of the shark carcass. So, and you know, the large coastal fishermen have come up with a way to leave the fins attached but still preserve the meat and to pack the sharks on ice. So.
Doctor?
Yeah, for large coastal sharks, that certainly does seem to be a sensible strategy. ID is critical. In the case of smooth dogfish, however, it's a different story. And Rick has done a very good job describing the council's position relative to why some fins should be left on the carcass of the smooth dogfish. ASMFC spent a great deal of time, as you know, on this issue. We struggled with it. we manage it in state waters. And we decided at our last meeting to, well, make a compromise effort. Well, it was a compromise position that we adopted that was very sensitive to enforcement concerns. We heard what the HMS people said were legitimate concerns. We heard what law enforcement said. So we did what we thought was sensible to enable the fishery to move forward so they could land a desirable product and not end up with a lot of waste on shore, a bunch of tails they have to somehow discard, get rid of once they bring them ashore. So that it was a decision to focus on enforcement concerns. So I hope as you move forward with your rules that you reflect on the discussion that occurred at ASMFC, and we hope that you can see the merits of that approach and that you'll adopt a similar approach for smooth dogfish, since it is not a large coastal shark. It's in a different category, similar to spiny dogfish. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you very much. We'll move right into our next agenda item, which is Scallop Survey Advisory Panel Meeting. Advisory Panel Meeting.